Hello and welcome back to the WealthFest podcast with me, Marty Guilfoyle. The health, fitness and wellness podcast brought to you by WealthFest and their presenting partner, KBC. I'm so excited to be back for a second series. We'll be speaking to another incredible lineup of industry experts, hearing their inspiring stories and motivating us to move well, eat well and live well. This podcast, supported by KBC, is just one of many health and wellness resources available on wellfest.ie to help you on your wellness journey. With thanks to KBC, we'll be tapping into a wealth of knowledge with our guests to empower even more people of all ages to prioritise their health, fitness and well-being. Now, let's dive into this week's episode. Patrick Beach teaches Awakening Yoga, a vigorous and fluid vinyasa yoga practice that builds strength, creates flexibility and inspires play. Patrick's teaching goes beyond intelligent alignment, moving any willing student to an introspective, holistic experience. Patrick owns Commune Yoga and travels the world leading classes, workshops and teacher training programs. Welcome, Patrick. You are joining us from Seattle in USA. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. And thanks for the flattering intro. It's kind of funny to hear those types of things.
Well, it's all accurate. Yeah. So you should be thanking yourself for it, really. Come here. How are things? How are you doing today? Are you good?
Yeah, of course. Why not be good? Sun is shining in Seattle. Life's good. We've been moving a lot recently, to be honest with you. We moved house and then we had to move our studio location create a second studio location. So we're moving a bunch of our stuff from our original studio to our production space for online now. So as we prepare to get back open, hopefully in the next few months, which is kind of wild to think about, but also cool that we've, you know, created something that's going to continue well past the lockdown period of 2020 and 2021, which is fun, which is coming online.
For people who don't know Patrick Beach, tell us a bit about yourself and what you do.
Sure. Things I'm most known for is obviously teaching yoga. I run a yoga studio with pretty much all of my friends called Commune Yoga, and we're in Seattle, and we have an in-person space, and we also have an online studio. And my partner and I, Carling, we lead Awakening Yoga, which is, I like to call it, a system of yoga that we teach all over the world, and we run teacher trainings for it and all that kind of stuff. And no, it's a really fun space, and we have a kid, her name's Harvey, and you know, she's quite vocal, which is truly amazing. It's pretty much what's made us be able to smile, laugh, and cry our way through the pandemic due to moments of joy and frustration.
I love the honesty there with the help make us cry as well. Like, because obviously parenthood and you're like, oh, the joys, you get to be a dad. And you're like, no, there were tears as well.
Oh, man, it's no joke. So my daughter, she speaks probably at the level of a 4 or a 5-year-old.
Oh, wow.
But
okay.
In terms of like her language and her vocabulary. But she still has the thoughts of a 20-month-old. So you're getting this wild insight into the mind of a, you know, 20-month-old child, very well articulated, literally all the time. Like, she never stops talking. I think it's because she's around adults who never stop talking all the time, and she, you know, really been able to be around kids as much, and so it's just like constant chatter all the time. I mean, and since it's truly amazing, but it's also like, man, like, you could sleep, like, it's good for you to grow. And
she's just adapting to life. She's like, if this is how adults and humans act around me, I got to catch up fast, you know? Like,
seriously, simple things she'll say is like, Daddy, I need some assistance to have breakfast this morning. Could you please cut me up some apricots? Like, that is something she literally said, you know, the 3 minutes before we got onto this chat.
That is insane. Oh my God.
It's wild, right? So I have no idea. I mean, she's also very uncoordinated. You know, I have no reference to other kids and what that means. But one of our friends who helps take care of her, who's worked in early child education, is like, yeah, she's like, she speaks at like the most phenomenal rate I've ever heard. She's very uncoordinated, but you know, it kind of is what it is. It's amazing. It's just a wild journey.
Yeah, I don't even think I know knew what an apricot was at that age. So she's definitely doing well. Patrick, the main reason why I'm loving to speak to you, or excited to speak to you, I should say, is because I have never, ever done yoga. And I know a lot of our listeners are going to be in the same position as me. So that's why I'm super excited for this chat. So you've traveled the world with your yoga classes, including Wellfest back in 2019. So where did it start? When did Patrick Beach go, you know what? I'm going to do yoga.
Oh my goodness. Well, I think you should try class. I'll start with that. Check out Commune Online. You could just try it from the comfort of your home, because then you don't have to, don't have to be around people. I think it's a wonderful place to begin. And the reason I wanted to say that, not to be salesy at all, honestly, just because that's really where I started. I really do believe the best place to start a yoga practice is at home, because it's a lot going on until it isn't. Do you know what I mean by that? Like, it's one of those things where you get into a room and you have like the public pressure of, you know, trying to do what everybody else is doing, and the teacher saying all kinds of stuff. And some teachers, you know, every teacher is different. And I think that's one of the most amazing things about the practice. Some people are really, you know, pose specific. Some people are really spiritual. Some people are really flow based or music based or alignment based. And there's just so many different ways to share the practice, which is wonderful. That can lead to quite a lot of confusion when you're first starting out. The funny thing about yoga is, if someone says, "Hey, I want to go practice yoga," that's really like someone saying, "Hey, do you want to go do sport?" Well, which sport? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's very different depending on what you're being asked to go do. You know what I'm saying? If someone was like, "Hey, you want to go do sport?" and they're talking about the difference between like golf and rugby, you know, that's quite a that's quite a window of.
Well,
physical.
If I thought I was going to play golf and I ended up on a rugby pitch, I'd be pretty upset. Yeah.
That's kind of what I'm saying, man. You know, it's quite varied. And so having the ability to find a foundation for your practice and just some general knowledge kind of around what you like to do and how you can find a little bit of joy along the way with it, I think is really important. And so, yeah, for me, like, I started practicing, you know, in my college apartment, I guess, reading books and stuff and just trying to do like five poses at a time and just kind of seeing what that came to be. And then over time I started to take class and stuff, but one of those five poses that I would do originally was handstand. Honestly, I was reading this book, and this was like one of the ones in there, and so I'd do like these four hip stretches and then handstands, and I would just kind of rotate doing that.
Yeah.
And I had no idea what I was doing, you know what I'm saying? Like, literally none. And then over time, I got kind of comfortable with that, and I started to take some public class. My mom had been practicing for a while, but she'd done much more of like the hot yoga path at that point. And so, yeah, and so then I started to take vinyasa classes, and I remember she was starting to take some too, and it was like fun and everything. But I would do handstand in class, and this is kind of before it was a thing. Like, now it's very much a thing in yoga. Like, people do it much more commonly than they did maybe 10 years ago. And so, people are like, "Whoa, what are you doing?" And some teachers loved it. And then some teachers would just kick me out of class. Like, seriously, I got kicked out of class so much.
Just for doing a handstand.
In the beginning. Yeah, man. Like, I got kicked out all the time. Like, it was just like, people would be like, "That's not welcome here. You're going to hurt yourself." I was like, "I'm not going to hurt myself. Life's good. Like, I know how to do this little thing. Like, I can't do anything else, man. Like honestly, you should help me out. My triangle pose, it's a disaster." But in handstand, I have that. I have
You've that.
Got that
locked
I have
in,
that
yeah.
piece of the picture. Yeah, I have that big piece of the picture in the bag. So it was quite funny, and it was mentally challenging at the time too, because, you know, I was looking for a new community and trying to meet new like-minded people. Like, I grew up playing high level basketball, and then as I just kind of lost interest in that over time and getting hurt and just changing, you know, I was looking to meet other people. And so it was kind of awkward and confronting to be not accepted by a few people and very directly not accepted. You know what I mean?
Oh, so, wow, okay.
But the flip side to that coin is that some people were really, really interested in what I was doing. And I'd done like a little teacher training at that point already. And so I would teach people in my apartment. People were like interested in the way I was practicing, the things that I was doing. And so I would teach like four people at a time in my apartment and in the kitchen. You know, we could like fit just four mats arranged in this really awkward way, and hopefully people wouldn't kick the counter. You know what I'm
or
saying?
Kick like each other.
Yeah, exactly. It was kind of a vibe. And so that's kind of how I started teaching and stuff. And really, like, long story short, that's kind of how I started practicing. Like, it was just this very simple process, and I didn't really make it more or less than it needed to be. And then over time, you know, things have obviously developed, and I've shifted the way that I wanted to share the practice and teach. And that's kind of what awakening yoga is. And mm-hmm. it's been such a cool transformation. That is really, I don't know, it's fun, I guess.
Yeah. I could stare at your Instagram for hours, watching some of the things you're doing. Like, I literally, you blow my mind with the way you move and at the pace you move. And like, I'm looking at some of these things thinking, like, this looks like a cartoon right here. There's no way there's a human doing this. No, I'm genuinely serious. And then what for someone like me who's never done yoga before, I'm watching you do it and I'm going, is this what yoga is all about? Because like I never see myself doing that. And like, was there a point, like, because obviously with social media now, it's so easy to find people like yourself and appreciate what the human body can do when you put so much, you know, time and effort into it. Was there somebody that you looked at, you know, when you were starting to do it? Does a name come to mind that someone you were kind of like, wow, I can't do any of that? Well, obviously you probably can now, but did you think, you know, I could never get to that level?
Maybe about 10 or 12 years ago, yoga was much more strict in its approach. And through social media, which is, I think, is one of the benefits of social media with yoga, it's really opened up what yoga can be. And it's also really expanded what people are doing, right? Because you're seeing so many different inspirations. I mean, my first foray into social media wasn't actually even about myself with yoga. It was really just trying to create like a yoga inspiration Facebook page. Mm-hmm. And so I did that like back when Facebook pages were like the thing to do.
Back when you could get a like on a post, yeah.
Exactly. It was back when that was like, oh, you know, Facebook wasn't hotbed of, I don't know, political jargon,
yes,
and
yes,
conspiracy,
yes,
and, you know, your random, I don't know, relatives' thoughts on who knows what.
Yeah.
But it's madness, man. But anyways, yeah, like, so I would just find things and then share them on that page, and people kind of like picked up on it. And I was just kind of, I would let other people share into it too. It was very communal, because I was just trying to see different things, you know. And in the beginning of my like practice, there was certainly quite a few people that really inspired me. I wouldn't say it was any one particular person, really, just because, you know, I was interested in so many different facets of the practice. Like, I started yoga by looking at yoga books. And so I already knew that the spectrum was much wider mm-hmm. than the natural public perception, because back then there really was like quite a lot of Bikram yoga out there. And then the vinyasa that was out there was mainly power-based. So either kind of based in, this is such nerdy yoga jargon, I guess, but like Baptiste power yoga, or like kind of like a Santa Monica power yoga thing. When I started to meet some other teachers and stuff, that I kind of got looped into the California, or Los Angeles more so, yoga works vibe of things, because I was really interested in like how things happened, and there was a lot of alignment focus there. And so I was, you know, worked with a couple of teachers who down there, one was named Annie Carpenter and one was named Brock Cahill, and they were both very inspiring to me. And mm-hmm. then you know, I had the opportunity to over the years like meet so many other different teachers, and that, you know, helped kind of influence a lot of, or like inspire me. I would say inspire more than influence, because to be honest, the people that influence me the most are the people, or especially for teaching, are the people that I teach.
Uh-huh.
Because that's really the foundation for awakening yoga. But, you know, like a lot of amazing time learning was spent like in New York with a friend of mine named Philip Askew. And then also just kind of studying the Katoni yoga system a fair bit, because it's much more unique in its approach as well.
Well, the one thing I love about the journey is that you've taken what you said, you know, you, four mats, a couple of guys in your apartment, trying not to injure each other in the process, and you've basically turned it into a full-time job. These are the stories that I love hearing about. Like, these are the stories that inspire people who are in that position now, who want to, you know, maybe turn that hobby into a full-time job, which is what you've done. And not only have you turned it into a full-time job, but you get to travel with it as well, which is, I guess, the ultimate dream for anybody doing their job. And I watched one of your videos where you were traveling and you were hitting up all these different cities for the classes and stuff, and obviously that is not a thing now, and you've had to transition to doing it virtually, you know, obviously at first you're going to think, oh, like, how do we cope with this? But how have you found that transition?
I actually tell all of our trainees exactly what you just said is like, hey, just remember that, like, I started teaching four people in my apartment. So, yeah. Like, when you teach your first class, like, and there's four people there, like, just remember that I was there and, like, everybody else that you know was there. Like, nobody starts out teaching, you know, every room is 40, 50 people. Like, that's just mm-hmm. not a reality. So, it's always good to have perspective on that. I've done online or class filming probably for the last 8 or 9 years. So, that's none of that is uncommon to me. The biggest shift was that I worked with a company called Ala Moves to create class content for, I don't know, probably 7 years or maybe even longer than that. And then when the pandemic happened, we quit working with Ala Moves to fully work with and support our own team and create and build Kami Online, which is what we've done. Mm-hmm. And that's been quite the trip. Because it's essentially taking people who, you know, were hired to be yoga teachers and studio managers and move them into being video editors and, you know, lighting specialists.
Yes.
And, you know, audio specialists and figuring out how to make, you know, because we make 3 new classes every single day, right? So for our online platform. Mm-hmm. And the biggest transition for us has really been this shift in creation to, like, letting it be like a full-on experience and making it be a much more living experience. Whenever I've filmed other types of content, you're trying to make the content so perfect because it's designed to exist forever, whereas we kind of flipped the paradigm on that, and our content or each class is only live for 48 hours, so it allows the teacher to be so much more human. Mm-hmm. But with that being said, the production on that is so much more intense. You know what I mean? You're going from, like, let's say I would record, I don't know, 10 classes or something every couple months. Now I record, you know, 4 classes a week.
Yeah.
And that, and doing that for a whole year. And then the rest of our team, like, but bless them, honestly, like, their perseverance and mental strength, capacity and toughness is really unmatched to me, because they also went from, you know, never teaching an online class. Like, the pandemic hit, I'm teaching in Australia. Like, yeah. I'm in Australia with Carling and with Harvey. We're in the first week of 5 weeks of teaching there. And the pandemic really starts to hit back in the States, and it really starts to hit in Australia. Mm-hmm. And we got, you know, emergency, well, even taking a step back from that, there's all these, like, hey, people are, like, starting to really take the pandemic seriously. I'm talking to my best friend who's also manages our studio, his name's CJ. And I'm like, hey, like, we should probably cap classes. So let's start capping classes on, like, Sunday. So Saturday is, like, a complete sellout. Every class is, like, packed to the brim. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh, let's put a cap on classes for Sunday. Let's drop it down to, like, 25 or 30 people per class, so that, you know, we're giving people some space. Mm-hmm. People are starting to figure this out. Sunday, we cap the classes. Everything still sells out. Monday, the state shuts us down. The state shuts down all personal business, right? A day later, we're getting told that essentially we can stay in Australia or we can, or we need to leave within, like, the next 24 hours.
It was,
right?
Literally a 24 hour thing that you were told that you said, yeah. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And I was telling my buddy, I was like, hey, like, you and Shelby and Erica, those are the other two people that are, all three of them film with Kami Online. Like, y'all need to start, like, practicing recording yourselves, because that's going to happen soon. I don't know how soon. I was telling them this on, like, the Friday before mm-hmm. all this happened. I was like, just, like, start recording yourself for little 10 minute classes, right? And let's just, like, see what that looks like. How do you feel? You know, just record it on your iPhone. Don't make it more complicated.
Yeah.
You know, and then boom, by Wednesday, so 5 days later, they're now starting to record hour-long classes, and having never done that before. You know what I mean?
That's, like, crazy.
I mean,
yeah.
Really not even knowing how to push record on a camera. It was, like, such a wild turn of events. And now we're to the point of, like, first couple weeks, just barely got, like, a camera and mic packs to work, you know? And then now we're at this point where, like, we have a much more full-on camera, and we have a 4-light setup, and we use specific mics and headsets. And it's just like, it's
like
crazy
a big, massive production kit. Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, massive in its own way. It's obviously not that wild because we're just doing a single shot.
But
the fact that, like, we're working with a team of people who had no idea how to do any of these things, and they've, you know, made that a reality within the scope of a year. It's impressive to me.
When you can officially open up classes and stuff, and obviously you've been doing the online videos, do you think that the momentum will stick with the online videos and that it might balance out with the classes? Or do you think that the demand for classes is going to be through the roof because people are just dying to get out there?
Well, I think there'll be both, to be honest with you. Like, I think that there will be, I hope that people are excited to come back. Like, I'm very excited to teach people again in the future when it's the safe thing to do.
Yeah.
But I do think that being able to find practices, like, if you want to practice the way that we practice, we're the only way you can do that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if you want to do awakening yoga, if you want to practice mobility the way we practice mobility, if you want to practice vinyasa the way we practice vinyasa, you can't do that at your local studio. You know, you can practice yoga, you can go to class, you can take great classes, you can practice with other great teachers. There's many, of course, but to do awakening yoga, like, you have to do it on Commune Online. So, put the people that have trained with us, but that's such a unique offering, you know? And so I do think people will continue to practice online because it's a different type of community. It's a different type of practice. But I think that people are, like, beyond, you know, they're hungry for in-person connection.
As
are we. We've been joking about a lot on our own podcasts. Like, hey, like, we're getting ready for y'all to come back. Like, we're completely renovating our studio, and we're really excited about that. We're making a much more smooth and streamlined experience, which is fun. It's just kind of one of these things. It's like, you never really know what to expect, and that's so, I guess, is what makes things interesting, but it's also what makes things so challenging when it comes to planning, as I'm sure you on the whole Wellfest crew is having a hard time dealing with, right? It's like, hey, when is the coast clear, if you will? When can we make plans?
Yes.
I rescheduled my Europe teaching like 3 times. and the studios were hopeful that things would shift and change. And whether that hope was, you know, I mean, obviously it was, you know, a bit false, but I'm an optimistic person. I always want to believe that things are possible.
Absolutely. Yeah, sure. You wouldn't plan for European tours if you weren't, man, during a pandemic. Absolutely not. Like,
yeah. So we just kept trying to reschedule. And so we're hopeful for this November that things can,
great, yeah,
you know, shift a little bit.
That does seem to be the rough time over here in Ireland that people are doing, kind of, whether it's music or, you know, yoga like yourself or whatever it might be, tours as such. It does seem to be people are rescheduling for like October, November, and are very hopeful for that. But I know you're probably constantly asked about this, but I just cannot ask you more about your handstands, because like I said earlier on, they are phenomenal to watch. I know you mentioned that you played basketball at a high level. When it came to doing the likes of, say, a handstand, I mean, did some of the strength that you would have picked up from playing basketball transition over to it? Or, you know, was it literally a case of where I've never done a handstand before, I'm starting from scratch? Or do you find that whatever strength you built up from before, that helped you out?
Oh, I had no idea what I was doing. I was a complete disaster.
Okay.
Oh, totally. Oh, man, that's
refreshing to hear.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, no. It's, again, when you're playing sport, your whole aim is to play sport and win, whatever sport you're doing. It's not like, technique is important, but technique is only important geared towards results in sport. You know what I'm saying? Like if you play basketball, because that's the only sport I really know anything about.
You're okay.
Really?
Basketball was my sport, and I gave it up for a career in DJing. So
hey, respect. But you can have you can have the most amazing looking shot. Like, you could have perfect form, right? But if the ball doesn't go in the basket, it doesn't matter.
No, just
you know, it literally does not matter. Like you could shoot it. You could shoot both of your shots with, or all of your shots, with two hands and throw them up from behind your head. If the ball goes in, 45% of the time, your success.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You're successful. Whereas like, if you got perfect form and it doesn't go in, then like you're kind of a lost cause. Doesn't matter what your mechanics are. Mm-hmm. So with handstand, it's actually quite the opposite.
I thought you were going to say.
You really need proprioception helps, and coordination and body consciousness is important. And that's probably something that I picked up from basketball. But really understanding how your body works and moves in space and your natural movement patterns are so important to understanding any of those things, because you could be, well, and most people are well strong enough to hold themselves up, in a handstand-esque position. But most people are limited in their wrist mobility and shoulder mobility. And that's actually the problem. It has very little to do with strength. Handstand is, the interesting thing about body weight movement in general is that everything is a skill first. And so people think, handstand, I'm not strong enough to do it. It's like, you're just not strong enough because you're wobbly and you don't have the skill. So you're overcorrecting all the time and your body is nervous in the space. And so you're kind of frantic a bit due to the fact that it's, very abnormal movement. You know what I'm saying? We all live in a position of sitting, standing, or laying. And even if you were to practice handstand for 1 hour a day, right? Even if you were to be upside down for 1 hour a day, that's still only, 4% of your life. So it's still majority of the time your head is above your shoulders. Like, that's natural. That's comfortable. And so you're trying to take something that is, kind of against the way you would naturally exist in the world and bring familiarity to it.
It's interesting you say that. Yeah. Because I remember I did CrossFit for about 6 weeks, Patrick. I just did it as something new. I mean, the pandemic
was
hit.
And
it was fun. Yeah, no, it was. But what came into it was doing press ups while in a handstand position, but I was against the wall. And what I found was, this is why I love what you said there, is that what I learned from just doing that was that it wasn't a strength thing at all. And it was actually a fear thing more than anything, because to just get into the handstand, to get up against the wall, I had to get somebody to help me do it because I was afraid to over move with my legs, The fear, it was the fear more than anything.
Yeah.
I discovered that after I got into the handstand position and did it. But then say to someone like me now here talking to you, and I'm like, look, I mean, how do I even start? Like, where does someone start in perfecting the likes of a handstand? Like, what's the first thing that you would suggest I do?
Yeah, of course. Well, I think for one, using the wall is obviously pretty much phase one to the operation.
Oh, great. Okay.
And of course. And then honestly, keeping it really simple for yourself, I think is the best thing to begin the process. And so the key to that would be consistency and simplicity. So the thing you want to always know with handstand is that your arms control everything. Meaning that if you're from your collarbones down to your toes, that's like a train, and then your arms are the railroad tracks, right?
Okay, all right.
And so if your arms stay straight, right, no matter how much force or how little force you use to get your foot up to a wall, right? If your arms stay straight, you will ride that train track in a straight path. You will get to your destination, right?
Uh-huh.
And so keeping your arms straight, learning to grip the floor, and then hopping so that you find the wall. And again, trying to jump as little as possible is always helpful, because again, the more power you add to your jump, the more momentum you're putting into the equation. And that always just requires, more to stop the momentum. Obviously.
Yeah, that's so, I found that out the hard way, 100%. Yep.
Yeah. And so once you get there, just holding for time, honestly, trying to build up, 5 rounds of 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Because you want to get your body familiar with being there, because that's what's going to help you eliminate the fear is trust, right? The trust that you've been in that position before. And the more that you build that trust, the easier things become due to the fact that there's an availability to the space. Like, you're like, oh, I've been there before. I know what that takes. And bringing that confidence into what you're doing is really, really helpful, because you're like, okay, not only can I be there, but with the support of the wall, I can be there for 30 seconds. With the support of the wall, I can be there for 45 seconds. Uh-huh. Like, that really changes the dynamic of the practice,
yeah,
right? That really makes it interesting. And then from there, one of the things that we really teach is spinal flexion into spinal extension, or hyperextension, I guess, which is really trying to round your spine before you jump. But because that is helpful for shifting your shoulders and hips over your wrists at the same time.
Okay. So, I'm trying to
those would be, yeah.
I'm looking at this in my head right now, trying to figure out how I do it. I'm like trying to envision everything you're saying right now. I can't help but not ask you as well, by the way, have you ever gone into a handstand and timed yourself and found the longest that you can hold it?
Oh yeah, I was trying that for a bit, man. It's just super boring. But the longest I got to was like a little over 4 minutes. Oh,
that is outrageous.
Man, it was.
And what do you do? What are you doing during those 4 minutes? Are you literally just
trying to look at different places?
Yeah.
Honestly.
I just know my boredom would go out the window. Confusing. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, the floor gets a bit confusing. So trying to find different focal points for different minutes of time was, I guess, kind of what I did. And I don't know if that's the best strategy, but that was just the strategy I was employing.
Well, if you lasted over 4 minutes, you did okay, man. Like,
yeah, man, I'm definitely not there now. For a period of time, I was really into seeing how long I could go for.
Yeah. And then, well, it's a human thing to do, isn't it? To know what you're capable of doing for sure. We'll take a step away from the handstands for a second and let's talk about Harvey,
yeah,
because you are a father and sure it's been an amazing experience, a unique experience. You know, has it changed your perspective on life? Has it affected, you know, your business at all? Has it improved it? You know, tell us all about it.
Well, I think, of course, having the kiddo just changes your perspective on life. Just due to the fact that you have to deal with and work with and kind of cherish the impermanence of everything so much more. Mm-hmm. Before Harvey, honestly, my life was very much the same. Like nothing was, while, you know, certain aspects of what I was doing was growing and evolving, of course, like that's just natural human nature. Like I would, you know, I was just traveling and teaching and just kind of doing things that I wanted to do, you know, like any time I wanted to do something, I could do it, you know. Yeah. And there was a real freedom to my life, obviously. And so, as you know, having Harvey and just growing into the responsibilities of being a dad and being a parent, you learn how to support another person and then how to appreciate the moment when she says, like, I love you, daddy, followed by the moment when she says, oh, daddy, leave. No daddy time right now. Daddy should leave.
And try not to take it personally, like, yeah.
Yeah, and just like, oh, like, this is, you know, it's really interesting because it's such a wave of emotion, if you will. You know, it's a constant shift and you just kind of have to learn how to be steady and how to, you know, not be as responsive to things, but or just kind of, I guess, know the things to respond to.
Uh-huh.
And you know, kind of keep your own sense of self along the way. I think that's like probably one of the hardest things that I'm definitely still working with is it's very easy to, you know, get lost in a day with her when, mm-hmm. you know, whether things are going really well, which they often do, or things aren't, which that also definitely happens. So, you know, I think that's how the business gets impacted more than anything else is like you're, you know, in having just that time with her. And so sometimes it's hard to be, you know, as interested in, you know, going through different work things.
Of course. So these are the precious years, really, you know, watching her grow up. Like,
yeah, I think the whole thing is precious. I think that like people don't admit this enough. I really did not enjoy the beginning of being a dad.
Okay, like, well, this is good to hear because like, you know, one day I'd like to be a dad and, you know, yeah, I am thinking that the start is going to be a little bit rough, but everyone's like, no, it's great. Oh my God, you get to the witness life and be part of it and all. And I'm like, come on.
I'm telling you, man, like I really struggled in the beginning with it just because, there was nothing. I'm a solutions oriented person, mm-hmm. and there was nothing I could do to help. You know what I mean? Like zero, like the best thing I could do to help was, which I did pretty much every morning. Harvey would sleep like the first 3 months, Harvey would sleep until around 6 a.m. and then she would wake up But if I got her like strapped onto my chest and we were walking, within 15 minutes, she would go back to sleep. And so we would go for these walks through Seattle, like sun, rain, snow, hail. You know, obviously she was protected and covered.
But like two to three hours.
Yeah, exactly. For like two to three hours, just so Carlin could sleep, you know. And like that was the most helpful thing that I could really do. Because besides that, like in the beginning, like it's a mom focused game.
Yeah.
You know, like it's, and Carling's, you know, done an awesome job, and she's grown so much and really become so much more of a parent, especially over the last year, which is amazing to see, like Carling's growth as well as Harvey's, because they do really mirror each other, which is quite wonderful to witness on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. Just stepping back to the beginning of having a kid, like it was just really challenging because they don't really know who you are. Like they're new to this world.
Yeah.
And you know, you just got to like remember that, you know, just like, oh, hey, like you're freaked out because everything here is new to you.
Yeah.
You know, literally every single element of what you're witnessing and experiencing is new. And that's, you know, for us now, like we, you know, we experience, like you go to your favorite restaurant and the menu's different. You're like, what is this?
And they almost freak out about it. You know what I'm saying? Way of I've never heard somebody put it like that before. And then again, like I don't have a kid, so I can't relate, but when you put it like that, even as you get older into your, you know, teens, 20s, 30s, 40s, yeah, when you're taken out of your comfort zone, you're put into a situation where you don't know what's going on around you, yeah, you're going to freak out. So,
yeah, I mean, man, even if you're in your comfort zone, even if you're in your comfort zone and like, you know, the price of bread is up a dollar this week. You're like, man, why is the price of bread up a dollar? you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a natural, like, what is going on that kind of occurs here and it like throws you off in your mind. And yet like every single thing a newborn experiences is that, and you wouldn't expect them to freak out. Like, of course they're freaking out. Like it's just part of the process. So, you know, I'd like to think that like I've grown into being a parent much more throughout the process of it, and really just kind of found my balance with it. I think that's one of the things that that may be challenging with social media and and parenting, is that you see people out there who are like perfect parents, or the perception of perfect parents, or it's so easy for you to get advice on how you should be a parent.
Yeah.
And of course everybody also wants to tell you advice on how you should be a parent. And, I think for every person, one of the things that you really want to own is like, where are you best as a parent? You know, like how can you be best as a parent? And then how can you support your partner to the same type of place and then get help when you need it? And what I mean by that is, like some people are full-time parents, like they thrive in that environment.
Yeah.
And that's amazing. You know what I'm saying? Like the thing they want to do is play with their kid and do stuff with their kid all day, every day. And then other people aren't in that space, and yet they're comparing themselves to that person. You know what I mean? And
that's
so unrealistic and it's unhealthy, because like you may be your best parent, like still going to have your job. You know what I mean? Like that may... So you're not with your kid 18 hours a day, but hey, when you're with your kid for those 4 hours a day, like you're really there and you're really a part of it. And you don't even think about being on your phone or watching a TV program or what sporting event is on. Like you're fully present and you're part of that experience.
Yeah, and you've just gone and done a day's work so that you can feed your kid and give it those extra comforts. Yes. It's a really good way of looking at it because, you know, from someone like myself who goes onto Instagram now, a lot of parenting content wouldn't pop up in my feed, but I mean it's so similar to the kind of content that would pop up in my feed, where it's that constant comparison to what's perceived to be perfection. And to hear that it goes on even to the extent when it comes to parenting is mind-blowing to me. It almost seems like it's in all aspects of social media.
Of course. Well, even beyond the comparison, I just think that as a parent, everybody wants to be a good parent, right? Like it's a job you sign up for, I think, but it's so challenging to realize that like, hey, you at your best parenting self is not like your friend, you know, Bill and Jennifer down the street who are literally like professional parents. You know
yeah,
what I'm saying?
I know
like,
what you mean. Yeah.
Like they're just people. They're just like, they're very, very, very good at it. And being a full-time parent, like, you know, I know people that are stay-at-home dads and they love it and they live life to the fullest. I know people who are stay-at-home moms, love it, and they live life to the fullest that way. And then I know other people again, who are just like, they're really good parents when it's in the proper balance in their life. Like yeah. everything in all of our lives is kind of about coming into a balance in self-recognition, right? And the more that you recognize yourself in the situations where you thrive in, the easier it is to be able to set yourself up in a way where you can be successful. You know, like, you know, you're talking about DJing, like there's certain types of events and venues that you probably thrive in. We're like, you know, this is my, this is where I do really well. And then there's others that you're like, this is not my thing. And it's okay to acknowledge that and admit that as a parent and still, you know, like do your best to fill in when you can, to support your partner if you have one, and to get help when you need it, and do your very best to create that type of balance in your life so that you still, you know, not only have self-identity, but you really have the best opportunity to show up for your child with as much, you know, clarity and focus and heart and love, because again, like, kids are just crazy emotional beings.
Yeah,
and it's fun, but it's also just wild.
Well, I hope the journey continues to be great for you with yourself, Carling, and Harvey. Before we let you go, I just want to touch really quickly, though, on the injury, because we were talking about comfort zones.
Oh, yeah.
And you had that massive injury to your Achilles tendon, I do believe. And I'm sure that took you out of your comfort zone a bit. And was it from playing basketball? I have that right, don't I? It was from playing basketball, yeah.
So lame.
Doing what you love caused you to be affected in what else you love, yeah.
Not even doing anything intense too, just like kind of goofing off. I mean, like playing a friendly game, and it wasn't even like a moment where I was, you know, there was
between the lines. Right? Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah,
There was a few moments before that where I was like, oh wow, like that could have been a bad moment. And then, ironically, the play that ruptured my Achilles tendon, it was literally like just a nothing moment. And it's weird that it happened like that. You know, I kept expecting it to hurt. It never did. The process for recovery has been interesting, just because, you know, like having a newborn plus, or like whatever, I guess she was a 1-year-old at the time, having a 1-year-old plus, being in lockdown and like having to crawl around my house to kind of chase her around was brutal. But
oh
it
my
was,
God, I didn't even think of that. Yeah. It's like she's out the door and you're like limping away after her, like
just crawling everywhere. I really don't. People are like, why don't you talk about your like injury more? I'm like, because I mean, it hasn't been that bad.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like, I can't create a dramatic story around it, because it's, to me, it's not been that dramatic. It happened. It obviously sucks, and it's incredibly frustrating to get injured. It obviously is challenging to get injured and to work through that, right? But nobody wants that. But my recovery process has been amazing. Like, I've been able to, like, I did handstand, I think, like a week after the surgery, you know, because I can pick myself up off the floor. Which was funny. And so that I found little things kind of throughout the way that, you know, gave me a lot of clarity and stability and like the recovery process. I did a very like non-conventional recovery, using something called ARP wave therapy, which I'm still working through, but, you know, kind of moving towards the end of it. And I've been doing that since the beginning, which has been incredibly helpful for getting back so quickly. I mean, I probably cut my recovery time in half, which is amazing.
Oh, wow, like great.
Like I could run and jump, like not fast or anything, but I could run and jump at like month 4.5 or 5, which is, you know, pretty shocking, because most of the time that doesn't come till, you know, month 9 or 10. And then
it's crazy. I think you can be out from just that one injury, isn't it? It's mad.
Like, yeah, totally. It's wild. The wildest thing about it is, again, like, it didn't ever hurt. It just, your foot just doesn't move anymore. It just stops working.
It's just there.
Taking
the year off. Yeah. See you later, man. Like,
it's just your toes don't move and stuff. So that's, you know, it's been a grueling process, like the recovery side of it, but it's also, it's been really eye-opening in a lot of ways, and it's made me, you know, believe in a lot of the things that we're doing and we've been doing, and then also continue to build into new areas of focus, you know, not only for myself, but for awakening yoga and how we can really continue to give people practices that are supporting them. And because that's really the biggest aim for what we do with awakening yoga, which is like finding practices that meet people where they are, as opposed to trying to make somebody meet the practice. Yoga is very initiation based in a way, meaning that like, hey, you, especially traditionally, which is like, hey, you do these things until you can do these things, and you can't do these things until you can do these things. Mm-hmm. And so we really want to create practices that support people and that are available and achievable. And, you know, whether you're, you know, first starting out, or you're trying to, you know, balance on your pinky finger or your pinky toe, because that would probably be harder, to be honest with you.
I think so.
You know what I mean? Like, whether you want to do that, like the way we're teaching and the way we're sharing the practice really helps you create an availability to that. So, you know, it's been interesting, but I would say that like, overall, like it's just kind of been something that's happened. It's something that I'm going through, and I don't really put more stake in it than anything else. Of course, like I wish it didn't happen,
isn't it?
Yeah. Of course, I wish it didn't happen. Like if you were like, hey, like could you go back to whatever, like October 17th or 20th, whatever day it happened, and be like, hey, would you have chosen to not play basketball that day? Like the answer is yes. Like of course, I wish it didn't happen. But I'm still here, you know, saying that like, hey, like I made it through the other side, and there's lots of hope. And of course, everyone says like, there's so many things you'll learn along the way. And I definitely did, but it's also just like, I learned like belief in my own optimistic output, and like, and that I really can focus on, and anybody can focus on their controllables. You know what I'm saying? Like, how can you bring more into the things you can do versus the things you can't do?
Gotcha.
You know, and like really, really bring the emphasis there. And that's when I found myself in that space straight away. I was like, well, that's, if I can keep this mindset, because it's not always going to be easy to keep this mindset, but if I can keep this mindset, then this is going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, kind of where I found myself. So,
Well, Patrick,
it is what it is.
It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you on the Wellfest podcast in association with KBC. And we've touched on so many things, from, you know, being out of your comfort zone to parenthood to being, you know, an instructor to four people, to now being an instructor globally, to dealing with an injury. We've covered so much. If you could give three main takeaways from this chat to our listeners right now, whether it's starting up their own business, whether it's, you know, starting yoga, dealing with an injury, what would you be able to tell them?
I guess the biggest thing I probably talked about today is like learning to work with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so challenging. I think self-recognition is one of the most important things that we can all work with in life, because being able to understand yourself helps you put yourself in situations where you can thrive and where you can be successful and where you can really learn about what makes you tick. Because, you know, we're all different and we all have a unique focus and a unique awareness to everything that we want to accomplish and we want to do. And the more that that we can find ourselves along that path, the easier it is to continue to walk it, and the easier it is to bring that level of support to others. I always like to say, you know, at the end of certain classes, like, you know, you're in your yoga practice for self-care, and self-care leads to self-love, self-appreciation, and self-empathy. And when you have empathy for yourself, you begin to have empathy, more empathy for others, and that empathy and kindness just begins to radiate out from there.
Love it. Patrick, thank you so, so much for speaking to us. Hopefully, you'll get to come over and be part of Wellfest when we're able to get it up and running again. And even that, I hope by then I'll be able to show you a handstand for longer than 10 seconds. And that,
hey,
to me, is,
I think you can make that happen. I have faith, man.
Well,
you
hearing somebody is after doing it for over 4 minutes, like, I think I can try work on getting a 10-second one before I get to see you in person sometime. Patrick Beach, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Have a great rest of your day, and thank you all so much for tuning in.
You've been listening to the Wellfest podcast with me, Marty Guilfoyle, brought to you by KBC. Remember to check out wellfest.ie for more free health and wellness resources. See you next time.